Hey King, how you feeling today, man?
Oh man, feeling good, man. Feeling good. Thank you for having me too, man. How about yourself?
Hey bro, I'm blessed, man. When you were mentioned to me, a little while back, man, and I did my Googles. I was like, shh, man, I'm talking to somebody who's done so much and still has much more to do. So it's a pleasure on my side, dog.
Oh man, that's man, it means a lot.
Yeah,
Appreciate
man.
that.
Nah, man, no problem. Like I said, I'm familiar with who you are, man, but when people ask you who you are and what do, how do you usually describe yourself and tell people what you
Yeah, it's funny because I have a hard time doing that, and
do?
usually I'll have somebody will be around, and they'll be the ones that hype me up and shit, and that's probably to my own detriment. But a lot of people may know me in different aspects of our culture, being one of the early blueprint setters for this podcast space that we're in, by way of the Combat Jack Show. My work that I've done there as a co-founding member, executive producer, and host of that show. And yeah, that's outside of that, artist manager and a visionary of all sorts.
Hey man, I think you did a pretty decent job of
That's me again,
describing
summer.
yourself.
That's me again putting everything in this small box, trying to fit it in and tape it up. But yeah, that's just a bit.
For sure. No, I was gonna say you did a good job of breaking that down. Visionary is a good term, and I want to speak to you about the vision that you first had that made this
Yeah.
whole thing happen. But before we get there, like all great stories, we always have to start at the origin.
Yeah.
I know when I spoke with you mentioned you're from Brooklyn and you said
Yes,
slash
sir.
East New York.
I think it's the quest to come out of your environment, and do better for yourself and your family, the conditions that that I grew up under. I grew up in the projects, and although back then had probably more sense of community, it was rough, but I noticed that, when I was finding my way, entering my teenage years, and those are the years that you could kind of find yourself getting into trouble. The OGs in my neighborhood wouldn't let me, and it's like, nope, not you. Like, I don't know if I was trying, but there was things that were happening that could have changed the trajectory of a lot of things. And they were like, no, not you. And what helped too is I have older brothers who they had already left, but the people in the community that knew them, I think they felt a sense of that we had to shield, myself from a lot of that stuff that was going on. So to answer your question, man, it allowed me to have a strong sense of discernment, a better decision making, a better decision maker, and it's when you go through those challenges early on, you have to process it, and not a lot of kids are able to process what's going on at the time. Fortunately for me, in moments I was able to, and I think that kind of helped me. And guide me to the person I am today. And then also on top of that, I mean, my mom and dad, I went to private school. So I was a project kid going to private school. And they did what they had to do to create a different narrative for for me, right? Because of the things they saw, they did the best that best they could with what they had, and that was the focal point. Like, yo, we got to make sure we give him the opportunity, despite the circumstance,
Man, the parallels you just mentioned about growing into projects and going to private school, like the parallels between that and Reggie is kind of interesting now that you mentioned that. And we'll get to that. But I want to ask you this, because I've talked to different people from New York, like, and the boroughs all had their own DNA. What makes Brooklyn different than any other borough, in your opinion?
Man, at times I often ask that question to myself every few years because it changes. But Brooklyn is special, man. It's like, and I only can speak to my experience, right? If I go to any part of this country, anywhere outside of the US, either one or two things is certain. Somebody's going to ask you where you're from, and you're going to tell them where you're from, and they're going to have a response. Usually, 10 times out of 10, it's an exciting response that comes with questions about cultural things, hip hop, or just the things that they've seen or heard because they may have not visited, or if they did, they didn't get a chance to see the things that they're used to hearing about, right? So I'll get that. The second thing is you're bumping to somebody from Brooklyn. Like, yo, you're from Brooklyn. Oh, and it's a big thing. Now, no disrespect to no other regions, but I've seen that happen when people are from different areas, if they don't get that reaction, right? And no disrespect. I'm only going on my experience. And shout out to everybody. I'm not one of those guys that's like regional bias or nothing like that. Sometimes maybe, but I get it. You know what I mean? But that I think that's what it is. It's just an allure about the city, and specifically Brooklyn. I remember I would go to North Carolina for summer vacations with the fam, right? And my cousins, they'll say, "Hey, you got this mixtape. Make sure you bring down this mixtape." And it's like, I wonder, like, damn, do they do that to other family members that live, maybe out west or Midwest? I don't think so. You know what I mean? No disrespect. I'm just saying that I think that it's just the allure. And I think part of it is the entertainment aspect of it, from music and television, right? We got Biggie, Jay-Z, and I don't want to just say them because it's way more than that, but
Fabulous, Red Cafe,
Brett
everybody.
Fab, MOP, all of these things, and then Spike Lee, right? And what comes with that? He's the guy. He's the guy in the front row of the Knick games, right? You have all of that stuff that people say they don't like about New York that they always talk about, as we see played out on social media today, right? The chopped cheese and the again, it's the allure because they haven't had the experience, so this is what they see. So they get a small sample size of that. I think that's what the difference is.
Thank you for breaking that down. And it's funny when you mentioned going to NC and they ask you about the mixtape. That actually ties into my next question. You came of age and were shaped by like New York disc jockeys really having New York in their palm, Funk Flex, K Slay, Angie, like everybody. And so my question to you would be is, what role did rap play during that time, and how did those particular radio jocks, how did they kind of influence you?
You wanted to participate. They created moments, and that's another thing that go. That's one of the elements that goes into the allure, right? It's for some reason things in New York is highlighted or amplified a little bit more, and being in the city, you want to be on that box. You have aspirations to say, "Yo, I want to do that," especially if you're immersed in the music of it. You might not like something that they're playing or an artist they might be aligned to that you might know some other cats and locally that deserve that shot. So you feel like, yo, when I get on, boom, I'm gonna service the community at large by adding my perspective and spin to it. And I think that's the if you're in that space, any kid that went to journalism school or communications, somewhere along the line, that's the goal. Like I gotta get on that box. But that's what it was for me. Like, just mixtape, the rap battles, the beefs, all of the things that take up your time and energy, you feel compelled to contribute to that. So you're like, yo, when I get there, I'm gonna make it count.
Yep. So this is where I have an interesting question at. You obviously your parents invested to make sure that you got a proper education. What were your plans for life after high school?
Honestly, it was in spurts. For me, I didn't have a 5-year plan as I should have. At that time, you're just trying to get out of high school and appease your parents and their family, right? Because the standard was, yo, you got to get out and go to college, whatever. However, you got to go there, right? And then you figure it out. So even that, like, all right, Do I become a liberal arts major? Do I pick them? It's one of those things. So you're just like, yo, I get to that step and then we'll figure it out. So that's what it was for me. I had no intentions in doing anything media wise, anything like that. I was a business major. So that didn't occur until my first second semester in my first year. One of my homies, another Brooklynite, he had a my boy Rasheen, he had a radio show. And I don't know, he one day we on campus and he's like, yo, pull up, come through or whatever. And I remember it was an afternoon show and I pulled up on him and that was the portal right there. That's when everything changed. Now I'm in there and I'm like, oh, I didn't even know they had this, I wasn't, again, I wasn't thinking about none of that stuff, especially as any college kid, your first semester, it's just the oasis. You get everything. You get the education component, the girls, the, finding out who's going to be your ecosystem of friends, right? You're not thinking about nothing else. That's going to happen second year, let's all the social activities is what consumes your time, right? So when my boy invited me to the spot, I was like, oh, hell yeah. And then from that point on, I was there every time. And then I became part of the show. And then we was making some noise. And then we started interviewing people, as we got to the next semester. And then we got kicked out. We doing too much. But that was really what stoked the fire in me, when it came to that. And I said, all right, I think I know what I want to do. I'm going to try to get into this radio space.
So at that time, were you working in, was it like a college radio station that you guys were doing this on?
Yes, sir. College radio station. So it's funny because it was a lot of non-urban programming. So we were like the rebels, and but we kept it cool, right? And but then we started interviewing people, man, and that was a game changer because usually in those formats, it's just you have a crew of kids that's just playing shit, playing music, talking pop, getting their shit off, and then that's it. But we were like really invested into this thing. We was like, all right, this is what we want to do. We don't care what the station, we're gonna play within the rules, but we're gonna put our own marketing efforts behind the show. And yeah, that's what started it all.
Were you all interviewing people on campus? Was it upcoming celebrities? Was it celebrities? Was it just people on campus? Like, what was the parameters of it?
The artist, it was off campus, we were just tapping into like more the underground, up and coming, I guess you could say buzzworthy aspect of it. At the time, like no major artist is coming up to, that's what we were trying to get to, as we implemented some marketing stuff, like, all right, we're gonna keep aiming higher because we only in this school for a short amount of time. Once it's over, it's the next thing. So that's what I was focused on at that point. So that was just using that to hone my skills and trying to figure out the best route to the radio stations in these in the New York market in particular, and then anywhere else, but even anywhere else part of it wasn't part of the discussion because I'm so narrowed into what I have in front of me.
That's an interesting point that you just made. Cause now my obvious question is, okay, you graduate, you get your degree, you've been bitten by the radio bug. How do you go from graduation to now I'm deciding to work with internet radio? Like, what steps occurred in the middle of that
Oh,
process?
that even that wasn't, that was by accident, right? So one of the things that I learned quickly after leaving college was I immediately applied to like all the local radio stations, Hot 97, whoever, BLS, whatever was going on at the time, right? So I'm like, all right, cool, I got this experience. I get in there and then, navigate, right? No way. That's when the reality kicked in, like, oh shit, I need relationships. I didn't know, still don't know networking. What? So now I'm stuck. I think I was hyped because I got a denial letter in the mail from whoever the program director was at the time, and his card, and he said, hey, continue to keep in contact. And in my mind, mind you, I'm super new to this experience. So I'm like, oh shit, all right, at least he gave me his card, right? keep in contact. I'm like, why did he, if he denied, then what's the point, right? But that, the lesson in that was the networking aspect, because you never know. It sometimes it's not about the moment. It could be something down the line, right? So I always kept it in mind from that point, but I'm still at zero now. Now I'm like, what do I do now? So I started working odd jobs and, you know, or whatever. And I was on Craigslist one time, and I found this opening for host for a radio, you know, situation. But it was in Brooklyn. So already I'm looking at this thing like, there's some scamming ass shit right here, right? So I said, all right, I sent them, you know, my resume or whatever. I reached out. They hit me back. They were like, hey, can you come down? The location was 10 J Street in Dumbo, Brooklyn. So I said, all right, let me go. So I get there. I'm already expecting the worst because it's from Brooklyn. And I just know how we do. Like, I'm like, what is this? Especially it's Craigslist too, by the way. So I go, and sure enough, it's legit. I go in there, I'm looking around, I'm like, okay, somebody got some money, you know. That's just my first initial reaction. All right, this is not a scam, but it still could be. If I'm still filling it out, then I met the it was a brother, Dennis. His name is Dennis. So they had two things going on. It was an internet radio station. It was also a they were doing some music distribution of some sort. So I'm talking to Dennis. He was more focused on the music distribution, but he was partner with another gentleman named Alex Norman, who ran the radio portion of it. But I met with Dennis, so I'm telling him all this stuff. And I think he, at the time, he was more focused on me coming in to help with his music initiatives. And he would play me some artists or whatever the case may be. And I would kind of give him my ideas and, you know, what I was, how I could impact what they're doing as we're entering the blog era too. So that's another component to this. So I was like, whatever. I just wanted to be in the building, whatever it was. 'Cause now I'm like, okay, this ain't no hole in the wall. It's legit. Cool. I think that either that same evening or maybe I came back and I met Alex, and Alex put me on game with the radio side of it, what they were doing, you know, on the radio side. So I was like, word. So then I think we agreed that, I would come in there, and I was doing a pre-record program for I want to say, I think it was 3 times a week. So now at that point, I'm like, all right, gotta, you know, let's sharpen the tools this way. Speaking of which, I see you did this. There was no money involved, but the money, the currency was the opportunity, right? Now I'm navigating. I'm like, all right, doing the show. One of the other girls that was doing her own thing, we ended up doing a show together. Her name was Indy. So we're doing our shit. So we're like, yo, we gotta get out and find talent, and you know, so that's what we're doing. I would go to anything that was popping in the city at the time, whether it be SOB, Southpaw, in fact, anything that was hip hop oriented, I was there pitching, selling, pitching. Yo, come down. Networking, right? I think the over time, those guys was like, yo, we see you moving around a lot, and you bringing all this talent in. Why don't you help us build a brand? I was like, all right, bet, whatever that looks like. So he was like, yo, we want you to, you know, you could still do your show. We want you to be take a title, program director. Still no money, right? Because we now collectively we're chasing the bag, we're chasing a distribution opportunity or generating revenue through advertising. And I specify that point, as I'm pretty sure we're going to get to something else later that's going to tie this all in. So we're trying to figure out all these different means to bring revenue, because now we're a functioning system. Cool. So now at that time, I'm like, program director, what the fuck do I do? Like, you know, I create shows, right? But I need talent. So I would go on Twitter, right? I go on Twitter and I'm just seeing who's popping off on Twitter, like that I potentially have access to, you know, that's within the proximity of New York City. So and this is for those who may see this. This is in no particular order, but I'm just throwing out some names. So one of the guys that I seen was there was a rap group called Lessendary, right? Don Will and Von P, underground rap, kind of like in the vein of a Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, kind of that inflection. They were in New York, but I believe they're from Cincinnati, I want to say. forgive me if I'm wrong, Don Will. Don Will is like killing it in the podcast game right now. I think he just won a Webby last year. So I reached out to those brothers and like, yo, man, we'd love for you to come down and do this shit. They was on board. They started doing their thing. There was other people. And then, you know, still navigating, trying to put this thing together. I would go on YouTube and I would see this dude. I would see this platform called Internet Celebrities, always on the homepage of YouTube. I thought it was the most funniest shit ever. You know, you got a guy by the name of Dallas Penn who had a partner named Rafi Cam, and they were bloggers too. But again, I'm not paying attention to that because I have tunnel vision because I'm trying to help build this shit. Because now I'm like, yo, this could be the thing. So I'm like, man, they're doing this dope ass shit. I just was looking at that shit and I was like, yo, this is funny. So I was out and about one day at an event, I believe it may be Southpaw, one of these venues in New York, and I see Dallas Penn. I'm like, oh, that's that dude. Oh shit. I pulled up on him, I'm like, yo, what's up, man? You know, I see what you're doing on YouTube. I'm a fan, yada yada. I would love to interview you, right? He's like, word, bet. All right, cool. He gave me his number, whatever. I would reach out to him. He would duck my calls, duck my texts. He wouldn't answer me. All right, whatever. I seen him again out and about. Oh, yeah. Did it again. Call him to try to set it up. And I'm like, yo, what is this, right? So I said, whatever. So now, okay, that I'm getting the timeline a little mixed up. That was right before they asked me to help build a brand. So in between the first two snubs, then I started doing this brand stuff. And then I said, you know what? I seen him again. And I said, he's like, yo, I know, I know. I said, no, forget that. I got another idea. Forget the interview shit. I got another idea. I want to pitch something to you. In my mind, I'm pitching him doing some of that stuff that I see him on YouTube. Maybe it's a space for him to do it here. So we set up the meeting. Cool. I think maybe the day before the meeting or maybe that morning of, he was like, yo, I want to bring my man Reggie. I said, I bet. Whatever. My man Reggie. Now mind you, we're in the blog, we're in the first phase of the blog era, right? I'm not tapped into the blog era. I'm tapped into the forum era, the forum aspect of the blog era. Boom. Which people often forget, which still is active today. And in hindsight, when you look back at it, all of those guys that was doing that was popular on the blogs came from the forums,
Came from the
right?
forums,
Whatever was
yep.
going on in whatever was going on in hip hop, they were chiming in behind anonymous names and people that were established too, what I come to
Facts.
find out now, you know what I mean? But not now, but you know, over time. So I'm on the forums because that's Twitter before Twitter, right? Right. So before a journalist could script out or write an article, a blog post about anything, he's getting it from the activity on any beef that was going on, East Coast, West Coast, whatever. Boom. New music, Saint Space, Z Share, all that stuff through the forums. So fast forward to back to the Dallas. So we he comes to the studio and he brings Reggie. Hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? Cool. So I'm telling Dallas, like, yo, he's seeing the space already. So now that's the first clincher because we had an awesome facility, right? So that's if you're trying to sell anybody something, the home base is important. You know what I mean? As soon as they walked in, it was like, okay, that's a check mark. So he comes in and he's like, wow, what's this? You know, I'm telling him what's going on. And I said, yo, I got an idea. We're trying to build out the programming. I would love for you to, you know, join the spot. Perhaps do some morning content. Because now we're trying to build out a schedule of programming. But again, there was no money. So the big ask is to people to do this shit with the hopes of generating revenue, right?
Damn.
So he was like, yo, this is cool. Yeah, but I need money. And that's the right response, right?
Yeah,
So
it
I'm in
is.
your
That's for
state. I'm like, that's always been like the. So I was like, yo, man, maybe we could do something else in the evening after, because he had a day job too at the time, you know. And that most of the people were you know, that was in the creative space, even to this day, they're working to support the or you know, invest in themselves through the creative, right?
facts.
Or to the creative rather. So Reggie's listening the whole time. Now, mind you, I don't know this guy. I just know that that's his friend. He could be his cousin. I don't know. At the end of the conversation, he says, Reggie says to me, like, yo, you mind if I get your information? I said, sure. So we exchanged numbers. He said, I'm going to send you a link. He said, click the link, read it, and let me know what you think. I bet. So we parted ways. They went about their business. I stayed there. I think Reggie hit me up the next day or maybe that evening, maybe the next day. Yo, fam, did you read the link? Did you click the link? I said, nah, I didn't. Mind you, I'm still not caring about none of that shit because I'm just here. So I was like, let me click this link because this dude is, I don't know who this dude is. He's going to keep calling me. So I clicked the link and it was a blog post from a website called Daily Mathematics, which was his blog, journaling his experiences or someone's experience under the name Combat Jack.
Anonymously.
Well, that's who he is, but the anonymous part, am I saying that right? Anonymous. And I know people that watch this like, yo, this sounds like the actual show because we would have these verbal mishaps. But
that was his pen name.
Right, that was his pen name. And Dallas had his shit called DallasPen.com, right? So they're both doing this thing. And I'm like, okay. I clicked the link, but I still didn't get, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a dope article. I believe it was about Mace or something Bad Boy related. And it was cool. Like, I thought it was dope. You know what I mean? I still didn't get the connection. And then I start following him on social media, Twitter, and whatnot. And I start seeing reactions to him. I'm like, hold up. Let me rewind this. Now I'm starting to get curious. And I called Dallas. And now he's like, yeah, that's such and such. I'm like, okay. But what I found interesting was there was a moment in time. There was a gentleman by the name of Byron Crawford. I believe he's from the Midwest, another blogger, elite blogger. Like, he's just, his mind is like crazy. I think he was the one who kind of revealed that Reggie Osei and Combat Jack is one and the same.
Yeah.
So now the information is, oh shit, he's one of the, him and his partner Ed Woods were the first hip hop attorneys. Hence why he was writing these stories on Daily Mathematics. Boom. Wow. I'm like, all right. So now we continue the relationship throughout the process. You know, they were like, look, we want to do some shit, but we need money. All right, cool. No problem. So I think it was probably about maybe a couple of months went on. They would come to the studio. They would pop in on our meetings, you know, just catching the vibe. Meanwhile, they're ascending in their world. And we did this. They were like, yo, while we figure out what we're going to do creatively, we got an idea. Well, what's up? I want to do this barbecue at the spot. And we've got this idea to do this event called the Bring Your Own Blogger Barbecue. We're going to house all of the people who are popping on in the blogosphere on the internet in one space, being the space we're in, which is called PNC Radio, 10 J Street. So at that time now, we're like, all right, cool, let's do it. Not thinking that this shit was going to be a moment, right? The facility, I believe, it could probably hold 150 people, like, that's pushing it. We had over 500 people in this space with a deck overlooking the East River of New York City. It was all free. And we had everybody who was doing anything significant in the blog space in one house. So we had Two Dope Boys, Nairite, Karen Civil, Miss Info, Paul Cantor. I'm talking about any and everybody at that time was there for that moment. And that's when I saw, like, yo, these guys, wow, like, these guys are dope. We got to figure out something. So shortly thereafter, Combat was like, yo, because we was always brainstorming about, what we could do, when we could do it. You know, he's a family man. So his time has to be, it has to fit into his schedule, you know. So then one day he hit me, he's like, yo, I want to do this shit. Let's do this shit. I'm like, do what? How? Y'all, you ain't no bread, bro. You know what I mean? That's what, you know. He's like, nah, we gonna do this shit. All right, cool. So I think I want to say August. That event happened, I believe, in June to July. And I think August We was like, yo, let's do this shit. And now we're trying to figure out the creative aspect of it, you know. And then also too, like I go back to the family thing. He had to get clearance from his family. Like, yo, I'm gonna be doing this a little bit. It'll be after hours, but you know. And once that was a go, it was like, all right, so what do we do? How do will we call the show? What is gonna be? Because mind you, the pivot was initially for Dallas. Dallas brings in Reggie. Now we're brainstorming this thing over this relationship for about, I don't know, less than a year, perhaps. And then we decided to the show. So the original name of the show was the Combat Jack Show featuring Dallas Penn. Now at that time, before we did the pilot episode, I was still doing my own show aside from the duties that I had building the brand. So they were like, yo, you gotta be a part of it. And I'm like, I don't wanna be a part of it because I'm doing this and y'all are crazy, right? Again, I'm also here, right? So then I was like, all right. I start off with y'all and then no, it was no and then. We just started and yeah, and then the rest is history. But that was the birth. Now, when we did our show, we how we did it was we did it live format and we took the audio, right, and we put it up on SoundCloud and iTunes for people to hear it in post, which is the action that we now know podcasting, right? On demand audio listening experience. So we were doing that for about in that style for about a year or so, maybe more than that. And the facility was going through some infrastructure changes. So we were like, shit, we what we gonna do? We don't have a home, we don't have a studio. So Combat being Combat, like he had a routine where he would get up, get on Twitter in the morning every day and just fire off about politics, social commentary, music, whatever it was. He was so engulfed in the hip hop community. He was very transparent about what was going on with the show, good, bad, indifferent, whatever. So he said, yo, anybody got a studio? We need a spot to record for like 2 weeks. So now he hit the he's an older gentleman, so he's looking at this thing from a different perspective than I am. I'm thinking, yeah, we're gonna be back in 2 weeks because that's what the facility is saying. He's like, dude, I've been here before. 2 weeks is never 2 weeks. 2 weeks could be 6 months. He was absolutely right. Maybe not 6 months, but it was a long time. You know, 2 weeks off the internet, you're cooked, you're done. So, a gentleman by the name of Chris Morrow, right? Also on Twitter, also a fan. He's watching, observing from a distance. Also from Brooklyn, right? So he's watching. So he's like, yo, let's talk. And I think there's a story, Dallas probably could lend some insight here. I think Chris was actually at one of our recordings early on, but I just didn't know who he was. But anyway, he's like, I got a spot for you to record. Let's talk. So lo and behold, we recorded at a facility that is a major, I don't know if I'm able to say this today, so I'm not going to say. People, you can read between the lines. You know, it was a big radio hub, New York City, and they had a syndicated office that does all the syndications, the pre-record stuff. He's like, yo, you could pull up over here, but you got to do it after hours, right? So we ended up doing it there, and that's when, if you look on YouTube, you see some of the episodes where we have, yeah, so Chris, so we go there. Oh yeah, so if you look at if you go on YouTube, you'll see like radio setup, like a radio. That's where we made that transition. And he said, "Yo, look, we could do it, but it's not going to be live. You're not going to have a live internet component to it." All right, cool. We like that. We could edit and post. We could make a mistake without worrying about because we were. That's one of the things. Those episodes early on, there was so much malarkey. But it was good though. As I was listening to an episode the other day, and I'm like, "Yo, this shit was fun as hell, man. Even the mistakes and all that shit." But so we just like, "All right, let's do it that way." And that's at that time we figured out like this thing could be monetized. Like we're participating in something that's probably far more serious than we think of culturally, that we're thinking of at the time. And sure enough, we were correct. And so we were there for a little while, and then that floor got they had some other corporate stuff going on at kind of pushed us out. Mind you, we weren't in. We were just making shit happen. And then we transitioned over to Stadium Red, which is where Just Blaze studio was at the time in Harlem. And then from there we transitioned to a different another studio, which became our home, which was Engine Room Audio in the Wall Street section, the financial district of New York City. But during that transition from doing the live format, that's when we knew it was serious, you know. And at that time, you know, we would whoever our guest was, you know, whether it be a Charlemagne or you know, anybody, we was like, yo, you should do a podcast, you know, we'll produce it. And like, yo, we're creating this network. What are we gonna call a network? We'll put the call to action to the fans too. Like, yo, we about to create this production house. And we had all kind of weird names, and it's a whole thing. And we settled on the Loudspeakers Network at the time. And in that point is what set off and created, I would say normally in my opinion, but factually, what created the blueprint, you know, at least on the urban side, to where we're at today in this podcast space.
Bro, thank you for giving us the context because, like, you know, when I read or, you know, did my research, it just talks about you becoming program director, meeting them, and then it just, you know, they make it seem like it's just instant. My question, so from what I'm hearing, if I'm hearing this correct, you know, Reggie was willing and he did the show without compensation. So he did all this and got the ball. I'm not going to say get the ball rolling, but he committed to doing the show without having really a sponsor in place for years, it sounds like at least a year or so.
Yeah, we were for the first year, 2 years. It was for most of us that were in that space at the time. We was doing our 9 to 5, and then you know figuring it out. But we knew because of what was happening on the internet, it's like how the reaction was and the community we were building, that there's a way. There has to be a way to monetize it. So initially, we were like, all right, we're gonna just reach out to brands, right, or have brands come in to see what we're doing. So we say, yo, we're gonna do a live. Let's do a live show at. Oh, so let me go back a little bit. Dallas Penn is also in heavy in the sneaker community, right? The lifestyle sneaker community. So he had those relationships, and when he bought on Premium Pete, he's also from the sneaker community. So we're like, all right, let's tap into that, you know. So he's like, you know what, we're gonna do live shows, live pop-ups at these. And I mentioned that for a reason, because now everybody's doing live shows, right? So I remember when we sat down, and forgive me right now, man, I can't remember the brother's name, but at the time I think he was doing marketing at Beats by Dre. So we was like, yo, we're gonna go to the Beats store, and he was like, yo, we're gonna do the live show there, right? And then I believe that particular show was gonna be we was gonna have DJ Premier. And that fell through, but that was what we saw as a possibility at that moment because no one was doing that. So we ended up doing that particular show at the studio, and we had a maybe about 75 to 100 people RSVP once it hit the limit. That was it. Come in as our audience, and we recorded that. So we were doing little niche things like that, you know, to connect with the community, but also amplify what we were doing for the podcast as a way of getting money, right? And if it, and the thing what we were looking at too was, all right, if we're not getting the money, at least we're getting these sponsorship situations where we can invest that back into the show firsthand. And that was a struggle because no one knew what this was to accept and embrace it as they do now, you know. So it's kind of hard. Like if you convince somebody, that was more so because of relationship. Because for years I would talk to, you know, publicists or A&Rs, artist reps, who would always pitch, "Yo, can y'all play the record?" No, it's podcasting. So even that training, the industry to adapt to a new way, like, "Yo, we're telling stories. We want to have a different conversation. This is not the radio." Over time, they got adapted to it and they figured it out, you know. But at all of those things we were doing, and then finding these new strategies and loopholes and just how to navigate in this space that's not radio. And also, I just want to put one caveat out there too. At that time doing this, the goal was to get the show on radio somehow, some way, because we don't see the end game, right? We're just
You didn't
seeing
see, yeah.
it's almost like the alternative to
To
the
the
box, because those people already been there for so long. How do you break that? How can you add to that? You know what I mean? Because there wasn't so many stations, right? You got two stations that cater to what we, you know, what we our vibe. So it's like we have to do it unorthodox and non-traditional by using non-traditional means, by using new means. So that's what that was. But then again, now as we now understand what we're doing in the definition of podcasting, we said, oh no, we're gonna own the space. We're gonna own the space. We don't know
See,
what we're doing, but we're gonna own the space because the love and the traction that it was getting. Now we're getting write-ups. Complex is covering it. You know, all of the blogs are covering it, right? We post an episode, it's a discussion piece for a lot of outlets. So we're like, oh, all right, this is it. Like, let's just keep pushing this shit, you know?
so y'all went from trying to backdoor your way in to just saying, you know, we're just gonna create our own industry in this lane.
Yeah, and that's what it was. And then you know, we've had, and then that's the thing, we've had those guys that you know, who were on the box. We had them on the show. You know, they were fans of what we were doing. They were fans until they weren't fans, and that's because of the competitive nature of, you know, when if you're on the box and you see something else brewing, and that thing that's brewing is getting bigger and bigger, it kind of becomes a threat. So now there are elements that are created that cause, you know, some turbulence. And we were like, yeah, because we don't have nothing to lose. So that's when we also knew, like, yeah, we got this. You know what I mean?
My question now, you know, when I look at your rap sheet and everything you've done, you know, I see a period with you working with A3C in Atlanta. How did you end up in Atlanta, and what made you decide to partner with A3C in particular at that time?
It was just it was more so trying to amplify what we're doing, get more eyeballs and ear holes into what we're doing creatively, right? Fortunately, through building these relationships, we connected with some folks that were believers in what we're doing, and they were the ones who pitched, you know, shout out to my homegirl Kelly Nicole. She was one of the ones who was like, I think she at the time she was working for the Brooklyn Hip Hop Festival. And she would be in the office and she's seen what we were doing and she's like, yo, I think there might be an opportunity, you know. So she made the connections early on. Yeah, so Kelly and there's a couple other people that had their hands on it. They were like, yo, this would be great for what you know you guys are doing to come down and to the festival, you know. So we did our first live show, big live show at A3C 2013, I want to say it was. That one was with Killer Mike and DJ Drama. I think they said we had about 750 people. This is our first. We don't know what we
Damn.
were walking into. You know, our thing was you always want to do it at home. So you get like an idea. But when we did it there, like, yo, we did this. And that's when we had the whole crew. You know, the Combat Jack Show started out with like, it started out with three people, myself, Reg and Dallas. Dallas brought on Premium Pete and Matt Raz. And also we had the DJ, TJ Ben-Ami, then Just Blaze. So we had a whole army in our peak form at this festival. And we did a live show and it was dope, man. It was super dope. And from that point, A3 said, yo, we locked in. So every year up until even after Combat passed away in 2017, you know, there was participation. Maybe not from everybody, but I was definitely, you know, the continuum of that. And yeah, it's just been every year we did our, I mean, 2 Chainz, Maceo and Bun B, Steve Rifkin, A-Track, the Hitmen, Bad Boy. It was a whole bunch of shit, man. Like, it just, we were ingrained in the in those activations for APC for sure.
Bro, so you know, at this point, you guys have created your own network, loudspeakers. My question is, you know, you got the Combat Jack show and the success of that. How do you go from the Combat Jack show to now tax season?
Developing, just saying, yo, we trying to do something different. I believe it was Sharla who said, yo, we gotta fuck with this kid, and he put Reggie onto him, and Chris obviously, and he popped. He came to the studio and we did an episode with him. And it's like, yo, it was still trying to figure out what it was going to be. And then just hit the ground running with him, And then what he tapped into was a different area in hip hop where, on the surface, the hip hop community that we kind of catered to without knowing was the college student, was the high school, the college dropout. Or the kid who didn't go to college, but they got a 9 to 5, but they're on the internet. What Tax brought to the table was the hood. The cats who was like, man, fuck all that shit that's on the iPhone. They probably deleted the podcast app because they was like, what is this? Right? So he catered, he that was his audience, which intersected everything else, right? And that was, and then I, just to, there was other shows too that got on the network before him too, but I just wanted to note that you had the Reed, shit, I forget the name of the show with rest in peace to Jazz Fly, NY, and shout out to NY Delight. They had a show, and it was some others, but yeah, that's very pivotal, very pivotal. And shout out to Jonathan Mena, he produced that show. He was in lockstep with a lot of stuff that was going on with that show as well.
You know, man, you guys, your show, the show that you helped co-found, you know, Combat Jack Show, it gets a lot of acclaim. Is, you know, like you shared it with me and I saw it online. It's called a Def Jam of Podcasting. When you think about its impact, and it's kind of hard to state, when we look at hip hop as a culture, not just the world of podcasting, what is its rightful place in hip hop?
It's the blueprint, when you can't mention this podcast space, and no, I know a lot of people, the sad and interesting part about our culture, we have an issue giving or being truthful and giving people their flowers. We're an information age. There's nothing that you can't every all any truth that you want to find is all there, and I felt like there's some that's going to say, well, y'all wasn't the first. That is absolutely correct. But we were the ones who set the tone. We made it a hot song, if you will. And I hate making that reference as a Nas fan, but you get what I'm saying. So it's like, we got to do better in, this is our culture. Like, why are we not celebrating these things, right? When we look at what the space is today, whether you like it or not, something else happened that allowed opportunity for a subculture to the culture, where a lot of people was able to not work a 9 to 5, or to continue doing creative stuff, and I don't know if we appreciate that as much as we should, and it's a flourishing industry. This is a multi-billion-dollar industry now, and I think we got to be a little, have more gratitude to that, because imagine what, at least for the urban side, what journalism would be as we exited out of print. The blog, that's the reason why we call it the blog era, because it's no longer, right? So what happens to Black voices? Well, this is the lane for it. So I think we us we you know I would hope that we're not treating this space as disposable, as a disposable outlet. Like, no, let's nurture this thing. You know, it's still young, you know. But if you're looking to get into this thing as a quick money grab, nah, that's not it. You gotta create culture, you know, tell stories, you know. That's what the podcasting space is, you know, is a platform for stories. In good conversation, obviously.
Speaking of stories and conversations, you know, what Combat Jack did when he created the Mogul series was show people the nuance and the fineness of hip hop storytelling. Could you talk a little bit about the creation of the show and what you saw for the show before the show became what it became?
So that show, the owner, CEO, the founder of Gimlet, quietly was a fan of what we were doing. And when go back to Twitter, you know, Combat tweeted, I don't know who's tweeting, and you got Alex Blumberg, who ran Gimlet, and he's like, yo, I'm a fan. We should, you know, have coffee. And then that conversation led into the idea and the exploratory exercise of trying to figure some shit out. Like, what can we collaborate and do? You know, so Reg's coming from the hip hop side, you know, like, yo, we got to tell a story. So I remember we was in the office and we was trying to figure out what we were gonna, you know, hey, we have an opportunity to do a documentary style audio series. Okay, what are we gonna talk about? And I remember we had a bunch of stuff on the whiteboard, different names and possibilities, and they settled on Chris Lighty, you know, the life and death of Chris Lighty. And I think that was the introduction to the possibility, because it's one thing to get on these mics and just talk fuck shit all day. Everybody could do that. But now we're getting to tell a story from people who were close to it, you know, with Reggie coming from the entertainment attorney back, having an entertainment attorney background, the parallel to what was going on in the early 80s, mid 80s, and hip hop expanded. So that was fascinating, you know. I was like, yo, that's it. Now, I'm honestly, when that came out, I said, yo, this is it. Like, this is the next thing. And it hasn't. I expect more because we got all of the. There's so much talent in our culture, but hopefully, you know, we'll get more. But I expect way more, audio style series that tell stories of our heroes, the people that we draw inspiration from. But there was nothing prior to that that you could say that was a possibility. You don't know, because a lot of these things were happening in real time. So we didn't have nothing to base it off of outside of like what we would see on, you know, visual documentaries. But even the thought that we could do that in an audio space, you know, it was kind of learning how to ride the bike for the first time. You know, but it was dope. It's one of the best pieces of work that's out there for sure.
Hey King, my question now is this. You know, a lot can be said about the role that you play directly and indirectly, but this is what I would like to get your perspective on. When you speak about what you do and it says content creator, producer, what does your day-to-day look like, or what does it look like? Not even day-to-day, when you're involved with a product, what does your role as a producer look like? What does your role as a strategist and as a content creator, what does all that look like and what does it encompass?
So I compare it to an A&R and an artist, right? You got to get to know the talent, the you know what they're trying to convey. What do they see as a possibility, right? Because the show's only going to go as far as the talent believes it's going to go. I don't care if it's a big name or not, you know. So just kind sitting down with them, learning what they want to convey, learning their style, their patterns, lending them my expertise, and just trying to figure out a strategy for that for that particular show. And it all goes down there. I've sat down with so many people, and that want to get in this space, big names or not. And I think what the challenge is a lot of times is the work that's involved. And I think a lot of people don't realize how much work has to be done from the infancy level of it to the execution of it. And that may shy a lot of people away from doing it, and then some people jump right in and figure out how much work it is, and then they stop. A lot of people want to jump into it. I say no. Do something in a shorter format that's not going to be put out, but just so you could pick it apart. It's the process of it, right? To see if you want to do this shit, to be honest, because this shit ain't easy. It may seem easy because we see a lot of stuff. Social media kind of paints a different picture. That's a whole nother conversation. But yeah, ultimately, you gotta, that's what I do. That's the conversations I have, because nobody got time to waste to be, you gotta, I like in this space today, like the film industry, people pitch shows, they pitch scripts, right? They pitch treatments, some go in development, some gets tweaked, and then there's a pilot, perhaps that's done, and then you can go on from there. And I think where we're at now, from economic standpoint, that's probably the best way to do it, unless you're gonna fund it yourself.
You mentioned that you, in addition to everything you do, you mentioned that you manage artists, or you manage and work with artists. Who are some artists that you're currently managing and working with that you may be at liberty to speak on?
Yeah, so all right, so let me go back a little bit. So during that time period of me having the aspiration to be on radio, I'm a music head. Like, that was the first and foremost. So yes, the first thing was to do the A&R thing, actually, right? But I still didn't know what that looked like. I remember seeing an A&R intern flyer in the hallway in college, and I'm like, ignorantly, I'm like, I don't need that. I'm gonna do it this way. That was the poorest thing I could have did. Like, just the like, but you don't know these things, right? But I say that to say, the music was the first thing, but then, my homeboy exposing me to the college radio aspect changed that. But so the artist management came about because I would see artists that need help, and some that were in proximity to me. If I was exposed to the music, I really, really liked it, and we had discussions. I'm like, yo, you know what? I can lend some of my cachet over here and kind of merge the two worlds together because of our relationships, right? I'm seeing all these record company people anyway. Why not have something tangible to say, hey, you need to check this out. Perhaps we could do something. So I don't do it in the sense that some of the other music managers do. I do it because I really like, I'm a fan of the artist first. You get a lot of industry cats who they just see it as a money grab, but there's no relationship. And then they're gone after year one and year two is over with. And I said, if I'm gonna do it or lend that expertise or that of creating some kind of structure for these artists, I gotta be a fan of it. So one of the artists that I work with, his name is Shai Summers. who interned at the time at PNC as all of this, but he was just there. I never knew he rapped or nothing. You know, 18-year-old kid, didn't know shit. Seen him years later at a rap show at in Williamsburg, and I'm like, huh? And then he's like, oh shit, what up? And then I was like, I didn't know you rap. He's like, yeah. And I remember he we met at the studio, and he played me all these records, and I'm like, what are you gonna do with this stuff? He's like, just put it out. I'm like, and just what you mean, just put it out? Just put it out. He's like, yeah. I was like, no. Reel this back a little bit, you know. So it's been cool working with him. He's actually getting ready to put out a an album soon in the summertime that I'm excited about. And it's yeah, and it's him and this other artist, phenomenal talent. Her name is Stina Flamingo, R&B. She's just different, and I don't want to say too much about her too much other than her name, but. She just reactivated her socially. That's how locked in she is, you know. But again, that's just, you know, leveraging relationships that, you know, that you've accumulated over the years, and you're like, here, you know, we're here.
Hey King, you know, you've had a pretty decorated career over the last decade and a half. I put in a half on that too.
Damn.
Yeah. Hey man, from 09 to now, you've been activated.
You know what's funny? When I talk to Dallas, I'm like, yo, really? Technically, it was 2013 was the official, you know, obviously we was doing it, but I'm talking about as far as the network, that was 2013. And that's really when we took it serious. Or adding a serious tone from the business aspect of what we were doing content-wise. But yeah, I received that.
So I guess one of my final questions would be, and you know, in the time since you started and you're looking at now, what's the second half of Act One gonna entail for you? What would you say you would like to contribute to the world of potting and the world of black creation at this point?
That's a great question. What is the second part looks like? And it's funny you say that because I listened to Benny the Butcher's latest album, his debut Def Jam album, but not his first album. And the lead single with Snoop, he has a line where he's like, "I feel like I'm going through my second life." And I'm like, "Damn, why did he say that?" Cause, and I'm like, "Oh, because he, we seen where they came from." The entire Griselda to where they're at now. And to his credit, he's saying he's just getting started. And that's how I kind of liken it to that now. You know what I mean? Where I don't want to say, I hate to be that guy, but there's tons of things that I have that I'm going to get off creatively pertaining to podcast space, but utilizing some of the other elements that are successful currently in the in other spaces. I know that doesn't say much, but that's the whole point. But there's something, you know what I mean? And you got to be a student of this shit, man. And I think there's another way. You know, I had these conversations recently, and I say, yo, middle of last year in particular, up to the end of 23, I say, yeah, we're going to go through a cultural reset. You know, there were so many articles about how music sales have suffered. You know, or wasn't on the decline in 23, the economy being what it is, you know, social media, we're in overdrive, and it's the same, you know, it's a lot of parody, and musically, same thing. But I think that's where we got an opportunity. Creatives have an opportunity to reset this shit. By doing dope shit, really locking in and doing dope shit. Even if you gotta fund it yourself. Stop bag chasing. Just fund it however you can and get that shit off, you know? And then all of that other shit gonna come, you know? But I look forward to the second part of it, you know? I feel like I'm just getting started. I think the first part with the trial run to see, hey, what is this look like? And now, as I mentioned before, you pick it apart and you say, all right, I could lend my philosophies here, and go off.
Bro, when people speak of your legacy and they speak of your contributions, what would you like for people to remember and say?
That I'm part of the reason, and it sounds so weird because I never say this shit, but that I'm part of the reason in particular this space allowed important voices to be heard. Visionary, a student, that's what comes to my mind currently.
Bro, there's no way that you can thank everybody who's contributed. But is there any people, or are there any people in particular that you want to shout out or thank?
Yeah, man, yo, shout out to obviously, for the people who elevated, helped us elevate the Combat Jack Show and our contributions, who helped me, people who helped me to this day. I want to shout out maybe who else? Damn, it's a lot of people though. Individually, shout out to Chris Morrow, Jonathan Mena, shout out to Charlemagne, man. Charlemagne, I mean, what could be said about, I don't think people realize the opportunity he has created for other creatives that look like us. I think we, the culture gets fixated about what they see when they do the show every morning. But outside of that, the dude has created a whole pipeline for creatives. And I think we don't celebrate that enough. So shout out to him for sure. And shout out to hip hop, man. Shout out to hip hop and all of the creatives who do this shit, who really care about the culture.